That has to be one of the most beautiful anthems. Absolutely gorgeous. Thank you. Our commitment committee has selected for the theme of this commitment season, give, and it will be given to you. It's from the 6th chapter of Luke. That's why I asked Melinda to read that passage, to read the context. And Melinda, I want to say a special word of gratitude for you sharing with us this morning. This church really is a family, and it impacts us at every level of our life. And we're committed to this church because this is the church of Jesus Christ. And thank you for challenging us and sharing with us in such a great way. The passage, give and it will be given to you, is Luke 6:38, but that's not all the passage. Give and it will be given to you a good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over. And it describes a very generous landowner who's ready to pay all of the workers who have been busy with the grain. They have harvested the grain. They have threshed the grain. They have winnowed the grain. They have prepared the grain for market. So now it's time for him to pay the workers, and he's going to pay them with the same grain that they have worked so hard to harvest. But instead of just taking a measure and just saying, here you go, here's some for you and here's some for you, he takes a good measure and he fills it up, but it's not really full, is it? Did you see that? Wasn't that neat that I could pull that off in the children's time? It wasn't full. First of all, you have to press it down. So he presses it down, and then he adds a little bit more, and then he shakes it. Just like I was shaking the jar when we were putting the sand in. He shakes it, and then he puts a little bit more, and he presses it down, and he shakes it until it is running over. And then you notice it said that it's poured into your lap. Because the workers in the first century would have robes, and so they would open their robes like this, like an apron, and then he would fill it until it is running over. The measure that you give will be the measure that you receive. It's a beautiful and a powerful image. Week after Christmas, Joyce and I made a trip to Alabama to visit my mother. Well, we were in my hometown, and we were driving down Main Street one day, and I saw the old gun store. And it brought back memories for me, not because of guns. But the old gun store on Main Street had the biggest parking lot in town. And every year at Christmas, when I was a child, all of the downtown merchants would give a car away. They would have a drawing for a brand new car, and it would always be the Saturday before Christmas. And whenever you made a purchase, you would receive a ticket. I'm sure the number of tickets, depending on the value of the purchase. And then the Saturday before Christmas, all of these people would gather in front of the gun store in the parking lot, and we would have a big drawing. You see, you had to be present to win. And I remember that because when I was working at the radio and television shop, and Mr. Yarber had the only portable PA system in town, it's the same one that street preacher would get every now and then. Early on that Saturday morning, we would go to the gun store, we'd get a ladder, we'd crawl up on top of the building and take those big bell-shaped speakers. You know, you've seen those? And we'd affix those to the top of the building. And then we would be there to run the PA system as dozens of people, and then hundreds of people, and then over 1,000, maybe 2,000 people would gather. And they would all have their tickets in their hand. And I can remember somebody had built this huge wooden, and they had chicken wire and all this. It was a big thing that you would just spin around, and there would be just hundreds and hundreds of tickets. And somebody would reach down, and they would pull out that ticket, and there would be a hush over the crowd. The ticket is 7-4-6-3-2. And then there would be a collective groan. Oh. But then there would be silence, hoping that nobody would raise their hand, that nobody would jump up with joy, because you see, if nobody claimed the winning ticket, they would draw another one. And we would stay there sometimes over an hour. Sometimes it happened quickly, until somebody said, "It's mine, it's mine." And they would win a new car for Christmas. That's not what Jesus is talking about here. He's not talking about having a winning ticket and maybe you'll get lucky and maybe you'll win that car. I know always in commitment season there's some people who say, "Well, here they go again. Every time I come to church, they're talking about money. And all the church wants is my money." Friends, that's not true. The Church of Jesus Christ doesn't ask for just your money. The Church of Jesus Christ is asking for your life, for a total commitment of every aspect of your life. If all we're going to do is give our money, then we have no more investment in what we're doing than the people in my hometown standing there with the ticket hoping that somebody's going to call their number and they will get lucky. This is Luke's version of the Sermon on the Mount. This is a little different in Luke than it is in Matthew. In fact, it's not even called the Sermon on the Mount. In Luke's gospel, it's called the Sermon on the Plain. But it's a sermon about life. It's a sermon about what is truly important in life. These are words about how to live our life in relationship with others. And the words of this sermon are revolutionary. They go against the grain of the world. They are countercultural, counterintuitive. They are like dynamite. Jesus is redefining the law. He's telling us that there is a different way to live, that there is a better way to live. He's telling us what it means to be a child of God, what it means to live a holy life. The Sermon on the Plain begins like the Sermon on the Mount. You have the Beatitudes. But then you have four sections. The first thing he says, love your enemies. To love your enemies is to go against the grain of the world. It's countercultural. It's counterintuitive. And then he said, we are to be merciful, even as God is merciful. It goes against the grain, countercultural, counterintuitive. But then he gets into a section on sight and blindness. Can we really see what's important in life and what is not? And then he concludes his very brief version of this sermon by saying it's not enough to talk the talk. You've got to walk the walk. That's when Jesus said it. A lot of people call me Lord, but why do you say Lord, Lord, and you don't do the things that I'm asking you to do? It's not enough to talk like a Christian. We have to live like one. Jesus is describing a way of life that will set us free. There was once an elderly monk, And somebody asked him, said, "What do you want engraved on your tombstone?" He said, "Well, when I was younger, I would have said, 'Here lies a holy man.' Then I got a little bit older, and I probably would have changed it to 'Here lies a good man.' But I think I would like you to put the words, 'Here lies a free man.'" You know, loving your enemies makes no sense. It goes against the grain. It goes against everything that we're taught, that our culture. But if we can learn to love our enemies, it can set us free. If we can be merciful as God is merciful, we can love with reckless abandon. We can live our life with joy and fulfillment. I know a lot of you have read the book. Some of you have seen the movie Unbroken. Tom Brokaw did an interview or program a few weeks ago in which Louis Zamperini, who is the person whose life is highlighted in the book and the movie, was still alive. He died just a couple of weeks ago. But Louis Zamperini tells about coming back from the prisoner of war camp in Japan. You know, when the movie ends, the war is over and he's set free. But if you read the book, he wasn't free. He obviously suffered from what we call now post-traumatic stress syndrome. They didn't know what to call it back then. But he had demons. He couldn't sleep at night without having nightmares of the prisoner of war camp. He started drinking. His marriage was falling apart. And one night in desperation, his wife was desperate, trying to save the marriage. She asked him to go to a Billy Graham crusade in Los Angeles. A young evangelist, Billy Graham. He went to the crusade. The second night he went, it changed his life. He gave his life to Christ. And if you saw that special with Tom Brokaw, he said to him, "That night, when I came back from the crusade, I slept for the first time without having nightmares. And I've never had one since." He was set free. You see, what this scripture is saying to us is that we need to live the type of life that will set us free, where we're not trying to keep score, where we don't feel like we're always having to even the score or get revenge, where we can live with reckless abandon, we can forgive, we can love, we can be merciful even as Jesus is, and we can give with reckless abandon. Garrison Keillor tells the story, as only he can tell it, about one Sunday at the Lake Wobegon Lutheran Church, when apparently Clarence was unusually moved by the sermon and decided he needed to make a contribution. But not wanting to call attention to himself, he tried to write the check without anyone noticing. He was concerned that tearing the check out of the checkbook would create a distraction, and so he waited until the Lord's Prayer. But he wrote a check, not really with his eyes on the check, because he was deeply moved. He wanted to give. And then when Elmer passed the offering plate, he folded the check in neatly in half and placed it in the plate, and felt so good about his gift until he started thinking about what he had done, and he couldn't remember how many zeros he put on his check. Did he write the check for $30, or was it $300, or was it $3,000? Could a man sneak downstairs after church and find the deacons counting collection and say, "Fellas, there's been a mistake. I gave more than I really wanted to give. But suddenly, for the first time, Clarence felt alive. He felt truly alive. He was terrifically awake. He had given all that he had in his checking account and even more. And he had been set free. The measure you give will be the measure you receive. There was a man who was a contractor. But in the recession and the real estate decline and the fact that nobody had money to build new houses, he was struggling to make ends meet. He was resentful because his father-in-law had plenty of money, but his father-in-law didn't appear inclined to help him any. And he felt like his father-in-law could bail him out, but he didn't do that, and so he was living a miserable life. And one day his father-in-law called him, said, "I need to see you." He came to see his father-in-law, and he said, "You know, I'm getting up in years, and I have some physical problems, and I'm not going to be around much longer. But there's always one thing I've wanted. I've wanted a big, beautiful house. I've wanted to build a house sparing no expense. I want to build a house that would satisfy my every need and want and dream. Could you build me that house?" Well, he didn't like that. He felt like his father-in-law here at the end of his life, should have a better way to spend that money. But he agreed to build the house, and then he started thinking, "My father-in-law won't be around that long. I can cut some corners in this house. I don't have to use the best material. I can use secondary material and inferior material. My father-in-law will never know the difference. For the time it surfaces, he'll be long gone." And so he built this house, and he cut all the corners on the house. But on the outside, the house was beautiful and magnificent. And the day finally came when he gave his father-in-law the tour of the house and gave him the keys. The father-in-law said, "Are you satisfied with this house?" "Yes." "Did you do your best building this house?" "Oh, yes, sir. Can't you see?" He said, "Well, I'm happy. Because you see, I don't need this house, but you do. I'm giving this house to you. This is my gift. And I hope that you all will be happy in your new home." The measure that we give will be the measure that we receive. Would you pray with me? Dear God, it's not about giving. It's about living. It's about how we live our life as believers, as disciples, loving, being merciful, forgiving with reckless abandon. And when we do, we can give and give and give, pressed down, shaken together, running over, because we know this is how much we have been blessed. Help us to live our life and to give our resources in the same manner that we wish to receive. Because we love you. This is your church, your family, and we are your children. Amen.